My heart both soars and breaks today. It soars with the knowledge that my gay and lesbian friends have finally been granted the rights and protections of equal marriage. Can I get a woohoo? What an amazing time in history. This time last year, when I marched with many of you in my first Madison Pride Parade, I was disheartened inside that our efforts in Indiana, where I had just come from, our efforts to oppose a constitutional amendment to define marriage as only between a man and a woman, had not yet yielded results. I marched last year also with the joy of knowing that I now lived in a state where same-gender marriage was an equality, but with a shadow on that joy, knowing how much further we still have to go. And although this makes my heart soar and sing every morning that I have woken up since June, oh goodness, right, I didn't write it down, 23rd? Sorry. Since that day in June, that historic day in June, when I was in sleep-deprived General Assembly, and therefore one day flowed into the other, my heart has sung and soared. And my friend and colleague, Nathan, who serves a UU church in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, told me that right after the decision, some parish clerks were refusing to issue marriage licenses to same-gender couples despite the Supreme Court decision. It took the governor there 2 days to say the state would comply with the federal ruling, and over a week for the state's constitutional amendment against same-gender marriage to be officially overturned. There is still deep unrest. And marriage is not the only goal. Even though same-gender partners still have the legal right to marry, there's still no federal protection against job discrimination for GLBTQ people. And only 21 states prohibit employment discrimination based on sexual orientation. So what does it mean to people that they can get legally married, but they have to keep it quiet in case their boss hears about it? Transgender people, princess boys, have even further to go. More than 3/4 of trans kids are harassed at school, and 1/3 of them are physically assaulted. 1/2 of trans adults have been assaulted at work, and 1/3 of them harassed by police. Trans people who try to use homeless shelters are routinely harassed, forced to stay in facilities designated for a gender they don't identify with, physically assaulted, treated so poorly they leave, or turned away outright. 19 states prohibit job discrimination based on gender identity. 19 out of 50, and Wisconsin isn't one of them. I've talked with trans people who consider themselves very lucky to have an employer accepting of their identity and or their transition, and I've talked with trans people who've kept their gender identity a secret at work for fear of possible repercussions. I was so very glad to hear that the theme of this year's Pride Parade is "The T isn't silent." I want so badly to celebrate the victory of my gay and lesbian friends with my whole heart. When I planned this service, way back in June, as I was figuring out my schedule, it seemed a no-brainer to be in the pulpit on Pride Day. I've been doing this work for years. I wanted to dedicate the entire service to the struggles and the victories of my queer companions on the journey. But black people keep getting killed. A friend of mine, a black woman, talked about this juxtaposition in June, sharing these words from a friend of hers. "I still see black women, men, and children's blood in American streets. And while you have your victory, I'm still here fighting for my humanity. And so I will celebrate and I will mourn, and I will fight all at the same time. Because how on earth can I possibly open my heart to people who have suffered under one oppression and choose to close it to people who have suffered under another? And how else can I honor my siblings who are suffering under multiple oppressions? People who are queer and black, people who are poor and queer, people of color who are disabled. As my heart soars with the victory of marriage for my gay and lesbian siblings, and as it holds out hope for progress in other areas of human rights for GLBTQ people, it also breaks with the continued and devastating losses of black lives. Today marks the one-year anniversary of Michael Brown's murder in Ferguson, Missouri. The online National Police Violence Map says that at least 288 black people have been killed by police since Michael was shot. And 2 days ago, an unarmed 19-year-old black college student was shot and killed by a police officer in Arlington, Texas, after driving his car through the window of a car dealership. When can America be America again? When enough of us wake up to the fact that America isn't the America we learned about in school, that discrimination and violence and intentional holding back of some for the benefit of others are embedded in our history and our present, that we are all part of a system whose purpose is not justice and equity, but power and success for a few. We've been fighting so very hard for marriage equality, and we've been using amazing strategies. One of them, to focus on the rights of this one singular group, has resulted in this amazing victory. And the language we've been using to draw attention to the stories of gay and lesbian people who love each other, and to very pointedly and unequivocally say that their lives, gay and lesbian lives, were worthy of all the rights that straight people have, I think has contributed to that victory as well. I think it's because we're also using the language of values and of morals. Once we started saying love is love, and that gay and lesbian people had just as much right to it as straight people did, and once we started telling the love stories of our friends, the opposition slowly started to fade. We started making people understand that it wasn't okay to treat gay and lesbian people as less worthy, and we started making it a moral argument, and love won. Despite my gloomy reading selection and my intentional choice not to put aside my anti-racist lens as I celebrate that huge win, I believe that love will win this fight too. I have to admit, I find it a little ironic that one of the arguments for legalizing same-gender marriage was to compare it to the movement to allow mixed-race marriage in the 1960s. Because now I'm advocating for the same kind of attention we paid to marriage equality to be paid to racial equity. In the midst of celebrating the victory of marriage equality, I cannot help but remember that black lives matter too. This is intersectionality, because not all gay and lesbian lives are white, or cisgender, or physically able. And even if they were, they and we are all connected by that thread that is humanity. One of the common threads of our faith, of the Unitarian Universalist faith, is seven principles upon which our member congregations affirm and promote. The first of these principles is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. The inherent worth and dignity of each and every person. Kenny Wiley, a black UU religious educator who lives in Colorado, has written about the theology behind this principle. And I'm going to quote him at a little bit of length because he is so much more articulate than me. And he says exactly what I want to say. He writes, "To fight for black lives now is to participate in radical hope. It is to battle for salvation on this earth. It is to fight for love, for life, for justice. It is to demand more out of the first principle. It is to demand a more perfect faith. Most of us in the faith are here because we felt welcome, Kenny writes, welcome at last here. Some of us were too agnostic somewhere else. Some of us weren't vindictive enough somewhere else. We were too working class somewhere else. We were too lesbian somewhere else. We were too nerdy somewhere else. Too introverted somewhere else. Too gay married somewhere else. Many of us are here because this faith and the people in it affirmed, you may not be perfect, but your life matters just the same. That's what's on the line now, he says. Through racism and posthumous victim blaming, through silence and bullets and indifference and vilification, Black people are being told that our lives do not matter, or that they matter only conditionally. Black lives matter if we are educated, if we are respectful, if. And sometimes, not even then, do our lives matter. Right now, we as Unitarian Universalists are being called to act, he says. We are being called by our ancestors, those who insisted, who demanded that we help end slavery, that we fight for suffrage, that we join the struggle to end Jim Crow, that we listen to and honor Black power. Lydia Marie Child and William Lloyd Garrison are calling us. Lucy Stone is calling us. Fannie B. Williams and Frances Ellen Harper are calling us. James Reeb is calling us. Viola Liuzzo is calling us. Guided by that principle, that enduring, unfulfilled promise in the belief in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, ours is a faith that has said or worked to say to those who have been marginalized, you are a woman and your life matters just the same. You are gay or lesbian and your life matters just the same. You are transgender and your life matters just the same. You are bisexual and your life matters just the same. You have a disability and your life matters just the same. You were not loved as a child and your life matters just the same. You struggle with depression and your life matters just the same. Right now we are being called, he finishes, by our ancestors, by our principles, by young Black activists across the country to promote and affirm, you are young and Black, and your life matters just the same. You stole something, and your life matters just the same. I have been taught to fear you, and your life matters just the same. The police are releasing your criminal record, and your life matters just the same. They are calling you a thug, and your life matters just the same. For the 195 Black people killed by a police officer so far this year, 3 police officers were charged with a crime. 3. It's legal. It's legal for the police to kill people. Does that mean it's okay? Does that mean it's okay?
No.
In the history, you sound like our kids. Does it mean it's okay? In the history of our country, it's been legal to fire women for getting pregnant. It's been legal to force Japanese Americans to live in internment camps. It's legal to build a wall to keep immigrants out. It's legal to deny voting rights to women and minorities. And it's becoming legal, again, to suppress the vote of people whose vote don't want to be heard, whose voice don't want to be heard. You know what I mean. To suppress the vote. That's what happens when I go off script. Are these things okay?
No.
They're legal. If the laws were made by a system that's biased toward keeping power in one kind of place, then the laws are going to be biased toward that as well. If the laws are made by a system that is biased toward keeping power in one kind of place, then the laws are going to be biased as well. Is that okay?
No.
Dr. King called the idea that morals can be legislated a myth. And he based this idea on his understanding that it was our hearts that needed to change in order for true equality to happen. But he did admit, quote, "While it may be true that morality cannot be legislated, behavior can be regulated. It may be true that the law cannot make a man love me, but it can keep him from lynching me. And I think that is pretty important too." But what happens when it's legal to kill people? That has to be fought with the tools of morality and conviction. The Reverend William Barber, the activist behind the Moral Mondays movement in North Carolina, the movement to push back against the voter suppression happening, Reverend Barber told us in Birmingham in March that a moral movement changes the atmosphere before the attitude, and that we need moral dissent like never before. And this, and places like this, is where we talk about that and learn about it. May we be part of that moral movement that will bring equity and justice to Black lives, as it has for gay and lesbian lives. May it be so. May we be so.